This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together, we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. I want to welcome everybody to today's podcast, episode 9. I have a very special dear friend of mine, Jimmy Ballard from Las Vegas. He's in the Las Vegas Golf Hall of Fame, great instructor, played out on the tour in the 70s and got injured and then decided to go on into a tremendous teaching career, which got him into the Las Vegas Hall of Fame, as I mentioned. Very good friend. We actually did opened up an indoor center together for a while, and Jimmy's kind of retired now, but what a wealth of information. He has one of the largest golf club collections I've ever witnessed, and it's just amazing. He's been collecting clubs his entire life. Jimmy, how are you today?
I'm real good, Gaylord. It's good to talk to the golf world.
Yeah, well, you're here with the Vegas Golf Coach, and Jimmy and I have been out in the trenches together and have taught together. It's been a wonderful experience. Very knowledgeable, very traditional, old-school teacher. So, Jimmy, tell us what you're up to these days.
Well, I give a few lessons, Gaylord. Not like I used to, because that's all I ever did in my life, which is all day long give golf lessons. Loved it. And people just kept coming. As long as they kept improving, I was going to be busy.
Well,
but as you know, golf has really taken a big downturn.
Yeah, it has.
We just need more people to love this game.
Yeah, I agree, Jimmy, and that's why I'm so involved in junior golf here in Las Vegas, and we're really trying to get it. Well, we've got it back under the Southern Nevada Golf Association's roof again. At least we have control of it again, and now it's just a matter of putting the time and effort in to grow it and bring it back to the kids and just introduce the younger generation to the game. I you know, the baby boomers drove this business for so long, Jimmy. I mean, you think about it. I mean, who's playing Monday through Friday? It's the baby boomers, the retired, the older guys that, you know, are in the third trimester of their life, and they have more time on their hands. And, you know, you look at the what's going on in society today, and most families, both husband and wife are working, and there's just very little time. And I think that's one of the things that the golf industry kind of lost track of is how are we going to continue to drive this in the future? So it's fun, you know, to work. I work with a lot of high school kids, and I know, Jimmy, you've worked with some incredible people over the years, and kind of give us a little background on some of the people you worked with.
I've been very lucky to have the talent come to me here locally, and for years had all the top players, and they came to me, and I worked with everybody's swing. Everyone's swing is different, as you know. That's why you and I agree about the golf swing and how to play golf so much, because everybody's trying to teach the swing, and there is no perfect swing. There is the best for everybody, the individual swing, and that's where your friend and my friend Dalton, you and I and several other people agree that we can be too technical in this game. I think it's nice to have the technical knowledge, but how do you relate that knowledge in a simple manner to people that would never understand it? Or do they need to have all of that?
Most of the time, no.
No, they don't. And so I think a person that plays doesn't need to have near as much knowledge as a person that teaches the game.
So I like the statement, Jimmy, that most people don't need that much information. And I think you're right. I mean, the golf instructor, you know, absorbs all this information so that he can find the one thing and communicate it well enough to the student to help the student reach their own best game. And I love the way you put
right.
that. So
everybody has their best swing and their best way to play golf. But I have a feeling that far too many people are on the golf course just thinking mechanics, and they forget the objective of what they're trying to accomplish. And that you got a ball. In all sports, you have the ball, right?
Correct.
And if the other team has the ball, then you're fighting to get it back. Well, in golf, it's your ball. You've got it all the time. Don't lose it. Keep it in play and be smart around the golf course. And you're not going to feel the same way every day. You're a human being. Your swing won't be exactly the same every day, even though you want it to be. It won't be. Some days you feel better than others. Some days you see better than others.
Some days you have less stress than others. So
that's right.
Yeah,
that's
every day is a different day in golf, and it's such a fine line between, your best day and your worst day. It really, typically, it's just something fundamental that you slipped into that it all of a sudden causes problems. And I don't think.
Well, you know, Gaylor.
Go ahead.
Fall in love with the challenge of the game.
Exactly.
And because it's a game not against anyone else, but a game for yourself against each golf course the way it's set up that day. And so go out and play the course, forget everybody else, just be polite to them.
Yeah,
incidentally, I have a student that went to Germany and taught about a half a year over. They have a program where you have to know that courtesies and the etiquette. You have to go to a certified teaching professional and get certified that you know the etiquette rules and you have a proficiency of play that would keep the golf course flowing good. And once you can do that, the teacher gives you a certificate. Well, that's pretty good on the teachers in Germany because that keeps a pretty fast flow of people coming to them.
Exactly.
But they're limited in their golf courses over there. But here in the United States, I think what hurt teaching a lot, and this might hurt some feelings out there, but sorry, people, we've had some bad teachers that have no clue what in the world they're doing. And
it causes problems.
It was brought to just recently. Because I'm on different golf forums, because I still do. And, those forums, there's a lot of information there. But you can't take it out on a course and play good thinking of everything.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the big problems.
That's where the practice comes in.
Yep.
Get the correct information. But the big key, you and I were talking earlier before the podcast came on, the big key is the setup.
Yep.
If your geometry is incorrect or your mind is not right, or if you're not ready, if you haven't seen the shot that you want, you're not going to hit it good. And being in a state of mind that gets your mind involved on what you want to do and forget everything you don't want to do and train your eyes to only see where you want to go and see the shot you want, do they all turn out that way? No. I wish they did. They didn't for me anyway.
Well, if they did, we'd both still be out there playing, Jimmy, on the tour and making all that money.
They were all perfect until I hit them, Gaylord.
Yeah, they all are. You know, it's interesting you brought that up because, setup is so fundamental. And, I work with a lot of beginners. I know you've had the opportunity to work with a lot of better players. And I have over the course of my career, but lately it's a lot of beginners. I mean, I'm putting emphasis on trying to bring new people into the game, and I'm focused
right.
on that. And, just to get them in a setup position that gives them at least an athletic chance and help them understand the geometry a little bit and give them some simple drills that they can go and work on at home away from the golf ball. I think the problem in the beginning for most beginners is the ball sitting on the ground and they're trying to get it airborne, and their concept of how to use the club or the tool is so misguided that they begin to develop.
Horrible.
No, and they develop all these bad habits. And then by the time they come to get some instruction, particularly the guy that's messed around with it for a couple years on his own, it's difficult to change those habits. And They just need to be realistic. I think that, you know, a lot of people come to you and expect that they're going to get this hour and a half session, and they're going to go away, and it's going to be profoundly different. And you know, I give them.
It might be different. It might even be worse than it was when they went to
exactly.
But if the information's correct,
yep.
And they believe the teacher,
yep.
Then it will get better when they practice and
yep.
get used to it.
And I think,
but most people don't endure that period of time.
Well, they won't do the work, Jimmy. They won't go do the drills, the motion drills or the balance drills. I mean, just to get them moving and balance. And you know, sometimes you got to take the ball out of the equation. Otherwise, they're just standing there making this choppy motion at the ball rather than making a complete swinging motion to balance. And so if they do the work, I love working with them. I watch them progress and they get better. And I've been fortunate enough to work with a couple high school kids over the last year and to watch them from where they were to where they are now. And it's simple stuff, man. And I get them so focused on playing and targeting and not worrying about what the other kids are doing around them, and just go out there and do the best you can and focus on every shot. I mean, pre-shot routine is so, you know, as they begin to compete, you know, having a pre-shot routine you can fall back under pressure is huge.
Absolutely.
And you know, all those kind of things that, you know, and my biggest thing, statement is, look, you don't play golf on the driving range or in the practice facility. You play golf on the golf course. And, you know, your golf coach is there to help you with your game, in my opinion. And obviously the golf swing is part of that. But, you know, I always like to get my students out on the golf course or in the simulator on the golf course and really see what they're doing, because half the time you give them a lesson, you get them, you know, correct, and then you get them out on the golf course and you realize you're aiming 40 yards right of where the target is. No wonder you're hitting it over there, you know.
And, well, you know, if they don't have that rifle aim before they squeeze the trigger, I mean, they've got to make a jerking motion to get it toward their target, don't they?
Oh, gosh, yes. So, they have to swing. Because they're looking. I mean, they know where the target is, and when they're aiming way left or way right and swinging at the target, all kinds of fun things happen.
Well, I know. They have a mechanical alignment is one thing, and the mental alignment is another thing. And when you don't have those two together, you're in for a bad day.
Yeah, no question.
But I tell everybody, that's the reason they make the next swing. That's the reason they make the next day, the next week. You know, you're going to have some bad days. Most people are too big a crybabies. They don't take the challenge.
Yeah.
If we could get people to challenge themselves and play enough that they establish a bona fide handicap, then that's their par. Now, how can they break their par?
Exactly.
Everybody thinks you're going to break par on a course. Nah, not very many people ever do that. But how can they break their par? There's a competition. And if we get people thinking that way, well, that's the way I thought and the way I've had a lot of students think. And you keep improving that way.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know.
I think that, you know, that's classic information right there, Jimmy. I mean, if you look at even the best players in the world, they have a 10-shot range. I mean, say the guy goes out and shoots 65. The next day he can shoot 76. And it's, you know, 24 hours later. I mean, I think, you know, better players have about a 10-shot range, and higher handicaps could have a 15 or 20-shot range, just depending on what level they're at. And I don't think people realize that personal par is what it should be. I mean, if you're an 18 handicap, you're looking at bogey is par. And so, you know, and that's what your goal is. And once you start breaking and start making pars and continue to improve and stop making the triples and the quads that usually show up, I mean, you know, you can shoot par and really feel satisfied. Hey, man, I shot my number today. You know, you can even get under par. And I think that is so profound. And I teach that to all my students. I mean, these high school kids, you know, they're trying to get on a high school team. They have to shoot certain numbers. And I say, look, forget the number and just do the best you can and play every shot the best you can and be smart.
Well, that's all you can do, isn't it? Huh?
And then they walk
but
off.
It's
into
hard to get them to think that way.
Oh, no, man. And then I was watching one of my kids and he hit it, you know, first hole. I said, look, if you hit it up in the rocks anywhere on this golf course, take the safest route back to the fairway. So he hits it in the rocks. He's in a bush. And, of course, he pulls out a club and swings and tries to drive it on the green. And 8 shots later, he finally gets to the green. And the first hole, he's out of the tournament. And
Well, yeah,
that is how you play the game. You've got to figure out, like you said, to not lose your ball and keep it in play and get around the golf course in the most efficient manner. And the swing, there's a lot of kids out there that have these beautiful golf swings on the driving range, and then they get out and they don't play the game. They play the golf swing.
No, because their brain gets in the way. Yep. And that's what we're doing a lot of study on now. Of course, everything we do is a result of what our brain function is.
Yep.
So it makes sense that if we can get our brains operating more efficiently and positively, then we're going to play better.
Yeah, but, I agree.
People say, how do I get positive? And you know what I tell them? People say, oh, get positive. Come on, get positive. Well, you're never going to get positive until you see some good things happen.
Yep.
You're never going to get that confidence that you really need until you see some good things starting to happen. And then it starts boiling over and you get that confidence and you start seeing shots you want, you start hitting shots you want, you start shooting scores you want, but they're never quite low enough, are they?
No.
That's the fun part. You know how you could have saved a few strokes out there.
Yeah, I think I don't care if you shoot 60 or 70 or 80. There's always some. You always leave some on the table, and
I'm quite well too. He's a friend of mine, still is. Excellent player, Tom Story.
Yes,
from Las Vegas. I think he lives in Mesquite now, but I met him playing the Oklahoma City Open. It was a PGA Tour event at the time. In a housing development called the Greens, their dog legs around houses. It was something else. But that's where I met him. And he won that tournament. I finished third, I think. But we were friends. And the thing about him, Tom Story, didn't waste a bunch of strokes on the golf course. Boy, he was stingy about wasting strokes. And I admired him for that, because that's what you have to do.
I think, as Bobby Jones said, most golf is played in the 4 inches between your ears. And, and that's why working and grinding on the golf swing and getting all the mechanics and, getting this perfect on plane, perfect this, it's just a small part of golf. I mean, and I just, I'd rather see a guy that has a rather unorthodox swing that can get the ball in the hole. I want him on my team. I just think that, you look at Jordan Spieth, rather unorthodox, but can get the ball in the hole. He's one of the best putters right now on the tour. And you look at the old days when we were growing up and you watched all of our models and, Jack Nicklaus used to lift his foot off the ground. So, I have no issue with my students lifting their foot off the ground, because his first move down was to plant it, and that created a weight transfer to the left.
Yeah. And there was a big long feed on the left heel, whether it should lift or stay down. Big debate. I mean, this was about 200 different pros were commenting.
Yeah.
And not one person ever commented, because they talked about Nicklaus's left heel a lot. Not one person ever mentioned that when he replanted his heel, that his heel was closer toward the target than it was at address.
Mm-hmm.
But most people replant that thing and their left toe or their toes are closer to the target at impact.
Right.
So, nobody even mentioned that, but he created quite a brace to hit against there.
Yeah.
I played when he played.
Cracked the whip.
And, he doesn't get the credit he deserves, because what do you have, 19 seconds along with 18 first?
I still
think
he
was always there.
Yeah. Yeah, for our generation, he was the king. I mean, not actually, I take that back. Arnold was the king for our generation, but Jack was the player. And, Tiger for the next 20 years, last 20 years has been just phenomenal. But, Jack, as Gary Player busted Berger's butt on tweet the other day, is that Jack Nicklaus is in his mind still the greatest player of all time, and his record is come on, 18 majors in that many seconds. It's crazy.
Yeah, 19 seconds.
Yeah. And you think about it, you go back and you look at the history of the game, and everybody lifted their left foot off the ground and planted it. It was just a way to get rhythm. And I think there's keeping the feet flat on the ground, there's some value to that, particularly with the athletes that are playing the game now. It's a totally
stretched out enough.
Yeah, they're in top form. They've got, but you know, to be honest with you, the problem with it is they get still over the ball. A lot of my students are gifted enough to keep their feet on the ground, but you know, they're standing over a shot and they're just stagnant. There's no movement. I mean, you've got.
I had a lesson with a guy, Gaylord, once. It was the first lesson he ever took with me. I said, well, take a few swings, you know, and I want to see what's happening with you, and I don't want to say anything for a while.
Yep.
But he stood over the ball, 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 and finally he took a swing. And I wasn't going to say anything to him, but I had to. I said, what in the world could you have been thinking standing over the ball that long? He said, isn't it something I stand up there long enough to get tight and tense? Nicholas stands up there long enough to relax. And I thought that was a great statement.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I think keeping my kid, I like to get, you know, once they get, I get them a pre-shot routine that keeps them kind of in motion so they're not starting from a flat-footed, dead leg position. You know, the golf swing is a balance, a beautiful balanced motion, and all the great golfers had great footwork and great balance, and the body just flows. I mean, you know, it's the rotation of the body that loads it, and it's the uncoiling from the ground up that unloads it. And when you see a great golfer,
right.
I mean, they look like everything is effortless. And then most of the, you know, beginners that come to us, they're just hacking at the ball. There's no finish. There's really no, I mean, you have to hit the left side. The purpose of transferring your weight into the left side is to brace you to the target so you can release to the target. And
yeah, but Gaylord, you know that most beginners think they can lift the ball in the air.
Oh yeah, they're all swinging
so
up at it.
Is pull back up out of the shot, and the right foot is dead flat on the ground. The left foot comes off the ground.
Yeah.
And I said, wow. I said, how long have you been doing that Confederate swing?
Yeah, exactly.
Confederate swing? What do you mean, Jimmy? I said, well, you fire and fall back. You know, they lost the war.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to fire and fall forward, never back.
Yeah,
and agree. They get the point.
I love that.
Those things are corny, but people remember the corny stuff.
Yeah.
They'll remember that more than the technical thing. So,
yep.
You know, and I have a lot of fun teaching. You know, I tell a lot of bad jokes. My students have always told me jokes, not real dirty ones, you know, but just jokes.
No, I enjoy
it. And sometimes you better laugh in this game. You better giggle a little.
Well, you've got to develop relationships with your students, and that's how you do it. I mean, finding out what they do. And a lot of times, you know, we did neuro-linguistic programming back in the day. You know, I was fortunate enough to hang around with Randy Henry and Chuck Hogan and got to meet Michael Hebburn over the years and a lot of other great instructors, including yourself, Jimmy. And, you know, we glean information from each other as teachers, but we always taught simple things. In fact, when video came out, Randy Henry made a statement. He said, I don't think this is really going to improve teaching. And so we all went on board, and I was noticing after about a year of using video back in the late 80s that my students really weren't getting any better. And I noticed a lot of my female students were kind of – I had one of those – it was a machine that actually you stood up and it had a – it was almost like having a video camera motion. But they would look at it, and they'd be more interested in what they were wearing and how bad their hair looked than what they were doing with their golf swing. It was crazy. So, and then MIT did a study in the early 90s on it and found out it was the least productive way of teaching golf and other sports. It said, you know, you have to figure out what their primary learning language is, whether they're audio, visual, or kinesthetic. And I think golf is kind of a feel game. And I think there's always a kinesthetic aspect to it. You gotta put your swing into some kind of form that you can feel, I think, you know. And so I've always been real kinesthetic, but, you know, I have students that have no lick of balance. I mean, they're auditory. And so Chuck Hogan told me back in 19, if you don't have a boom box or some kind of music playing and available for some of your students, you're going to miss them. And so I had this one student who came in and literally would lift his – in the backswing would lift his right foot off the ground and then plant his right foot and swing up and onto the heel of his left foot. And for the life of me, I couldn't, you know, I'd sit there. We got to develop a motion. Come on, get the ball all the way. Try to swing to finish. He could do it, but then when the ball was there, so I thought for a minute and I put on some music And I put on a waltz in the back. You know, and Ernest Jones used to teach in his in that apartment building or office building in New York with waltz music, taught all some great players. So I put this music on in the background, and all of a sudden he starts getting a little rhythm and starts looking like he knows what he's doing. And that's, you know, that was 20 years ago when that occurred. And I've always thought that I've always had that option when people just really just have no coordination whatsoever, put some music on and get them dancing, and it works. I mean, crazy stuff.
I just, you know, I was a singer. I just start singing them my theme song.
There you go.
You know what it was, don't you?
No, go ahead, Jimmy. Tell the audience.
You know, Gaylord.
Footloose.
Talking to some of the teachers, and we're talking about different books we've read and all that stuff, and different ways we've learned, who we've learned from. And of course, everybody's smart enough to not say they learned it all by themselves. We, you know, we steal from everybody.
That's true.
You got to steal from the best.
That's true.
And then pass it on.
That's true.
And hopefully they'll pass it on. So, but I found out something in these golf feeds that I'm on. You know what the average fee is for a 1 hour lesson for any kind of golf pro that's teaching out there in the United States right now?
It's over $100.
$143,
yeah.
Gaylord.
Yeah.
Well, now come on, and that's from those aren't all from PGA pros or really bona fide pros. Those were a lot of people that just said they were pros.
Yeah.
And it really hurt golf a lot. But you know, the game is so hard that when I get people that I start, and I've taught a lot of people never had a club in their hand before. I love it.
Yep.
Because they don't have any misinformation.
I love those too.
I get to feed it to them a spoonful at a time.
Exactly.
And let them progress. And they see the progression and they fall in love with the game. They take the personal challenge. And years later, you'll see them playing golf and their kids are playing golf and their grandkids are playing golf. You know, I'm so old now, I've taught so long that, you know, I'm seeing these three generation things.
I know.
And it's great to see because it's such a family game.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I mean, look at Eddie Fryatt. I mean, these are kids that were growing up when we first started teaching here back in the mid-80s, mid to late 80s. And you've been doing it since, you know, well before that. But I'm actually associated with a kid that was on my boys' Junior America Cup team in 1992. Great junior golfer, and you actually gave him lessons. You know, we're talking Justin, and it's fun.
Yeah.
It's full circle now. I'm actually working at his one of his businesses, golf related businesses, helping out. And you know, I'm well past 60, and you're pushing 70, and yet we're seeing these kids that are in their 30s that we used to teach when they were kids, and just doing well and using golf as part of their business or creating golf businesses around themselves. It's really cool.
You know, I turned even par this year.
Yep.
On par 72, of course.
72, yep. I know.
Yeah, unbelievable. But, I mean, I saw Randy Creighton come by Saturday and saw me. I haven't seen him forever.
Wow.
You know, I worked with him the time he was 12 on through. He and Chad Fosberg were the two best junior players in the world. I know you work with Chad too.
I work with Chad for 8 years. Yeah.
Yeah. The two best junior players in the world right then.
Yeah, they were.
We had them going here.
Yeah.
They were. They were rated such.
Yeah.
And he came by, but you know, he got a scholarship to Pepperdine. But I never heard from him again after that. But I'm real proud of him because he and his wife had a business here in town, but he became a lawyer.
Right.
And I think he's successful, but had another student. Avi Kittry was the smartest kid in the whole school system here. I started with him when he was 7, and I told him, you could probably be a golf pro. I said, but don't waste your great mind on being a golf pro. Go save some people.
Yeah.
You know, help world. And he's a cardiologist in California now.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of things that we see later on, Gaylord, that mean so much. You know, they passed something on that wasn't just about a golf swing, but it was about life.
Yeah, no, I think it is. And that's why I love working with the high school kids. And when I get them when they're around 13, 14 and get them through high school and off into college and just wish them luck, man. I mean, I had several, I mean, obviously 10 or 12 that I pushed through back when in the early 90s when I was really involved in junior golf. Got to work with Chad and Billy Harvey off and on and Russell Nygaard and you know, just some great golfers from the era. And, you know, and it's great to see him and not, you know, none of them. I watched Scott Piercy working with Tom Carlson a lot. And, you know, Scott's made it out on the tour now. And he was a great ball striker even when he was younger. And got a chance to kind of get him into Henry Griffiths clubs when he was a junior, which, you know, of course, when he went off to college, you know, he started playing the equipment that the college and now he's with Ty Liston. Just a great, you know, great golfer. And, you know, we've watched them grow up, and it gives us something to root for. And, you know, I'm real excited about working with these three or four high school kids I'm working with right now. I wish I could get more of them. But most of them that are very competitive have been working with somebody since they were very young. And that's just the way of the game now. I mean, if you've got a passion for the game, you hook up with somebody and you work with them for a long time. I've got another kid that's switched over to Butch Harmon schools that I worked with from the time he was 10 till he was 13. And, you know, so it's rewarding to watch these kids. And, you know, my deal with them is I take them out on the golf course and I teach them how to play the game. And obviously on the course, I can see what their weaknesses are. Do we need to work on the short game? Is your swing or is your setup getting out of whack? You know, if you don't have a set of eyeballs on you and you're aspiring to even play college golf, you know, you're going to go down some windy roads with the swing. It's, you know, it's a tough game. And, you know, I encourage them just to really get into the pre-shot routine and really have a system they can fall back on under pressure and stop looking at what the other kids are doing and pay attention to what you're doing. That's the biggest deal. So many of them are so worried.
I've got a kid right now that God gave him a great golf swing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes our creator gives us better swings than any golf pro can ever give you.
I know. And our job is not to screw it up.
That's right.
Yeah.
But if he just took 10 seconds out of his life, he could really be good. The 10 seconds to set up good.
Exactly. It's that
You're
way.
Still there, Gaylord?
I'm still here, buddy.
Okay.
So it's.
But the setup, but then you give them a lesson. If you're on flat ground, they get on the golf course, the ball's above their feet, below their feet, they're downhill, they're uphill. It's sitting down in the bottom of the roots. It's sitting on top. You have to experience those things on the golf course.
Yeah.
And I wish, you know, I was very busy as a teacher. You know, my reputation. I'd just start early in the morning, be there all day long with no breaks.
I know.
And they just kept coming and kept coming and enjoyed watching them improve. And but I didn't really have much time to hear people out on the golf course. But when I did, I noticed it was unbelievable. The golf course management was just horrible. They aimed at trouble.
I know.
And
a lot of times
you know,
the golf course.
Second hole at Municipal Golf Course.
Yeah.
When I was teaching out there at Las Vegas Golf Club, I give this guy a 9-hole playing lesson on the front nine. The second hole, all those trees along Washington Street there.
Yeah.
He pulled his drive, and then I watched him hit about every tree going up that line till he got to golf, till he got to the green.
Now, that's a 600-yard hole, so he hit a lot of trees.
Yeah, he did. And so he said, well, what do you think, Coach? And I says, well, Woody Woodpecker, this is what I think. He said, well, why do you call me Woody Woodpecker? I said, well, on the second hole, you pulled it over in the trees, and you just pecked on wood all the way up to the green instead of getting back in play, and that ruined your round right there.
Yeah.
He said, you're right. You're right. Well, that's common sense.
Yeah, you would think so. You know, I've always had the opportunity most of the time to take my students out. You know, after a couple lessons, I mean, I want to get them on the golf course. And, of course, my regular students that I work with, like my high school kids, I mean, we're out on the course every week. We might do a session on the swing or the short game, but we're on the course because that's where I can mm-hmm. teach them the best and take them to another level. When they can, you know, Tiger's strength was his mental strength and his ability to stay focused. Yeah. And, you know, it's something that I work on with my students. I give them breathing techniques. I let them get upset for about 20 seconds, and then they have to turn around and focus on. Then I go, so what are you going to do on the next shot? And we go find the ball. We take a look. I mean, you can't teach them how to punch it out under the trees. You can't teach them those shots until you get them in those circumstances. I mean, it's very hard.
Right.
I mean, you can teach a kid how to hit a low knockdown shot on the driving range, but then you get him on the golf course and it's in deep grass and he's got to keep it the club under the tree limb and he's got to see the shot and visualize it and you can't teach those things on the driving range. You've got to get them out there, and that's why I enjoy doing my coaching sessions, the initial ones, and then immediately in the process of developing them, I always get them on the golf course. And having access to the indoor facility is awesome for beginners because we're not slowing anybody down on the golf course. And I can.
Well, you know what I think I'm going to do more of this next year, because I'm not as busy in my teaching as I used to be. But it'll give me time to get people on the golf course and give some playing lessons.
Exactly.
And you know, I haven't played since '99, since they about killed me and ruined my spinal cord. But I can give a good playing lesson because all my attention is going to be on my student.
Exactly.
And it's like I can think for them. And when I've done that before, they always shoot lower.
Always.
Which proves they've got the swing, they've got the ability. But they just don't think right.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of these kids are playing in tournaments up until about they're 14 or so, in some of the tours, and their parents are allowed to caddy for them. Well, if that's the case, I want to make sure the parent is in that cart with me as we go through this playing lesson, because they're going to be on the golf course, and they're the only other voice of
you know,
calmness in the whole situation. And if they're not supporting them and talking to them the right way.
Parents are just wonderful with their kids.
Yep.
And then some parents destroy absolutely everything you try to do with them.
Yep.
And they'll get in a tournament, and if they don't play well, and often they don't, they go home, and the mother or the father say, "What's wrong with you? What happened to you? You know, well, you played golf and you had a bad day. That's what happened, Mom, Dad." You know, but they don't think of it that way. So now they're out on a golf course. The first bad shot they hit, they have fear in them.
Exactly.
They're afraid to go home and tell their parents that
exactly.
they played bad, or tell their golf coach. And I tell my students, and I'm sure you've always told yours, that, you know, just try your best every shot and add it up, and I'll be proud of you.
Yeah.
That's the best you could have done.
Always encourage that.
That's the best you could have done.
Well, we have a 10-shot rule.
Best ever shot.
As long as they're in their 10-shot range, we're happy with the round. Doesn't matter whether it was 90 or 80. We're happy with the round because they stayed within the 10-shot range, and our goal is to reduce that 10-shot range over time. And
uh-huh.
and that's kind of a philosophy I put on them because that takes the pressure off. I mean, they can have an 8 on one hole and not panic because they're still in the range. And so,
uh-huh.
you know, you have to set realistic expectations for these kids. And, you know, I've worked them down from shooting anywhere from 101 to 88 down. Now we're breaking 80 now, but our range is still 78 to 88, you know. But this is over the course of 1 year, and, you know, people think they're going to become a scratch golfer in 3 months. And it takes my, you know, based on what I've seen over the years, if you have a dedicated student that's grinding out, they can get pretty good in 18 months to 2 years. But typically, it's going to take somebody about 3 years to develop an overall rounded game. I mean, you might get his swing going in the first year, but then you got the short game and putting and pre-shot routine and mental. All of that stuff has to fall into place to become. It's not about the golf swing to become a scratch golfer. It's about the whole aspect of it. And I think people just don't realize that. And, you know, even I'm still playing at a, you know, decent level. But my expectations have always been realistic. So, I mean, I can remember when I first turned pro, if I shot 76, I had a bad day. I mean, I was beating myself up because I'm supposed to shoot under par. I'm a pro, right? And
right.
And that used, and I finally realized after 5 years of negativity that you got to cut this loose, Gaylord. You have to just go out and enjoy the game for what it is and just play the golf course and have fun and don't worry about what you shoot. It's what I shoot is.
I always told you you were a lot better than you think you are.
Always. Always.
You're better than you think you are. I could. You'd sit in that simulator and you'd shot after shot after shot, just exactly the same, just perfect. And then you go out and have a round and tell me, and I thought, man, that's high for the way he hits the ball.
It's called not being able to putt anymore, Timmy. So
that's also called not playing all the time anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the short game kind of goes sideways. It's hard to work on the short game inside, so it's beautiful at the country club now. I have that whole short game area and the 19th hole I can take people on. So having access to all the complete facility is huge as a teacher. And, you know, having the indoor facility is awesome because I can look at the swing, and I have the weight transfer machine, and I can teach them how to move their weight a little bit just by putting them on the machine and having them move a little bit. So, you know, so where were you this time? Well, you're still on your back foot. You're still on your back foot. Let's move to the front foot. And all I'm doing is showing them where their weight is at impact and why they're, you know, releasing early. And it's always because the weight is back and they're swinging up. So 90% of the time, I mean, it's fascinating to just work with people and really to sit down and put a program together or a plan in place to help them get to their best. I mean, if a guy's working 40 hours a week and wants to play on the weekend, how much time is he going to have to practice his golf? And so
you don't, so you have to be realistic
exactly.
about it.
And so you just say, look, here's the deal. Go do these drills. Swing your golf club at home 20 or 30 times a day, 4 or 5 days a week, just to keep your hands on the golf club, and you'll get better. It's inevitable. But if you just rack them or leave them in the trunk all week and then show up Saturday and run out and hit 20 balls and go out and play, don't expect a lot, okay? Don't expect to improve.
No.
So if they're coming to me for a lesson and that's their mode of operation, I'm going to tell them, look, let's go chip and putt or something, because anything I try to do to your full swing, unless you're going to put the time and effort into it, it's probably going to make you worse in the beginning. You might as well go groove your compensations 20 minutes before you tee off and go have a great day because you chipped and putt better, you know? I mean, a lot of times I'll take that tack with them, and then it makes them realize, holy crap, you know, this guy really just wants me to play better. He's not here to take my money and give me a golf lesson and say, see you later. You know, I think there's a lot of that going on out there, and, you know, I find that.
Well, I think there is, too.
Yeah.
Well, I made that statement earlier.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, you look at it here in town, the country clubs have really gone downhill.
Yep.
They're having a hard time making it. Probably closed over 300 courses in the United States last year.
Yep.
You know, and the game is so hard, most people don't endure getting into it because it just beats them up, and they just can't take it. You know, they were good at everything else. Now they play golf, and, gee, I was good in all the other sports. Why am I not good at this one? Because nobody is when you start.
No.
Nobody.
It's different.
You know, I use Michael Jordan. I say he's a pretty good athlete, you'd have to admit. Oh, yeah. That's the way. He's a good golfer now. But he's not a great golfer. He loves golf, and he works at it all the time.
Yep.
You know.
It takes that.
There was a deal, when should your children start learning? And I said, well, I would prefer you play correct audio tapes while the baby's in the womb.
Yeah, exactly. Get them started early, right?
Yeah.
Or put pictures of Al Geiberger swinging over and over. Yeah. There was some great audio and visual tools back in the 90s, and there was that one of Al Geiberger that would swing over and over and over. And it was in a loop, and Chuck Hogan put it on his Aim to Win video. And I used to sit before a tournament and watch that as I went to sleep. And when I got up in the morning, I'd turn it on again and watch it. And I'd just sit there in silence and watch it and just pick up
his CyberVision.
Yep, CyberVision. And
yep.
I loved
Sheehan
it.
Did one, and so yep. did Mike Dunaway.
Yep. And it
they
was
great.
Yeah, Al's was awesome for me. And it just got me in a rhythm, you know. And I grew up in the old school where we swung the club head, you know. I mean, it was just,
right.
You know, and that was Ernest Jones. And then I got involved with you know, through the years, and I work with Jimmy Ballard, not you,
right.
Jimmy, but Jimmy Ballard. I got a chance to sit down and watch. We were doing some club fitting down at Doral, and I got a chance to watch him teach. And actually Tom introduced me to him, and it was interesting. And from that point, I decided I wanted to teach. And I talked, you know, it's like I asked Jimmy. So Jimmy was really big on ESPN at the time. He had Sandy and Curtis Strange on his team. And I go, so you've got these 15 common denominators, Jimmy. He wrote the book, The 15 Common Denominators. But the funny thing about the book, right. It was 150 pages long. 78 of them were just on setup. Okay. And I ask him, so what do you think the most important common denominator is? He said, listen, let me tell you what this is all about. This was marketing. Okay. When I'm working with a student, I keep it simple. And I said, so tell me in a couple sentences what your concept of the swing is. And he goes, elbows down, arms in front. And it was profound, because when I began to kind of think about it, it keeps the club on plane and requires you to rotate properly. It was just an amazing, simple statement. And, you know, Knudsen, his big deal was rotate to load and transfer your weight to the finish and set up the same. You're only further from the ball with the longer clubs, and the club will tell you, that will dictate where the ball goes based on its design. And you set up, you rotate, you hit your finish. Don't do anything in particular with your hands and arms. And simple
John
things like
Jacobs.
Yep. Simple. And ball flight.
Turns line. With a swish in the middle.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
But
that was his statement.
The setup that is the key to all of it.
Exactly.
You know, we talked about attitudes and who can really end up being a player. When Tommy Two Gloves Gamey came out and got on the tour, I told people he's going to win a tournament. No, that guy could never win a tournament with that grip and that swing. I said, let me tell you what, he's going to win. I said, because if I ever got in a fist fight with that guy, I'd never want to get in a fist fight with him, because if you knock him down, he'd keep getting back up, and that's what you need if you want to be a winner.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he won.
Yeah.
And had a chance. Could have shot in the 50s came really close there.
Yeah.
But now he's going to have a good life, his splash that he had on the tour there. And it's not over for him either. But
no.
Well, he played good for a few years out there, Gaylord, now with all that money.
Yeah. No, you can do some amazing things. Yeah. Tommy's a great, you know, coming off the Golf Channel, you know, the big break, and then he was really the only guy that ever made it out of the big break. I mean, there's Matt Every's done it, and there's some other people, but not to actually win it and go on. So he's a great story. I mean, I just am fascinated with his impact. I mean, he was so steep and just compressed the crap out of the ball.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and it takes that. I mean, people don't understand that, you know. The difference between a scratch and a club pro and a tournament pro is like a thoroughbred to a milk horse. I mean, there's a lot of club pros that can shoot 66 on their home course, but you get them out on the tour under all that pressure, and it's a totally different ball game. And, you know, you've got to be able to compress the ball consistently to control your distances. And, what you know, the difference between catching the ball right at the ball and actually descending through the ball and compressing it is night and day. And that's why the better players have always sound so different when they're striking the ball, because they're really compressing it and consistently reaching low point consistently. And you know, impact is what it's all about when you're trying to control your distances. And, you know, that's why a 5 handicapper can have a pretty good swing, but he's, you know, he just doesn't quite have control over his ball flight. And so, you know, they're going to struggle a little bit. And I just, you know, I think you got to hit it pin high if you want to play good golf. And that requires a real consistent distance control. And that's tough to do unless you're really good at impact. So, you know, it's
And if you let your mind wander, you'll get tight and you won't have your rhythm and you'll lose your sequence and you won't hit a good shot. So, now, you mentioned Mike Hebron earlier.
Yep.
Somebody borrowed that book I had of him, mm-hmm. See and Feel the Inside, Move the Outside.
Yep.
Man, I thought it was a great book.
And it was one of the best books in the beginning. And then, of course, 4, 5, 6 years later, in 92, he came out and said, I made a mistake. Now he's so into learning techniques. I'm fascinated with my Mike. I follow him all the time. I really like his work. And he's got a new book coming out. All his books have been great, Jimmy, and I actually have an extra copy of that. I have the original one that he wrote as his master thesis for the PGA, the white one with the red and blue cover. And then now it's down into a smaller paperback size, and it's like fifth edition. You know, Inside Moves the Outside. It's that simple. Some great pictures in there. He related it to other sports very well. I always recommend that book to my students that are really serious about the game, because it gives them a chance to absorb some really good information and put it into their own frame of context. You know, I mean, I don't recommend a lot of books to my students, but there's a couple just because they're good reads and because I know the information in there is going to be good, and it will allow, because it's their journey, you know, Jimmy. We're just there to coach them, and, you know, we know what they need, and so we guide them through the process. We can see the one thing that fixes a lot of things. We can guide them down the road because we're the set of eyeballs that keeps them on track. And, you know, over my career, when I've always had a set of eyeballs that kind of watching me, you know, regularly, I've always played better. And then when I go off because I'm a teacher, you know, I know why the ball goes right, left, and straight, and I get in these grooves, and I you know, all of a sudden I start blocking it right or pulling, hooking it, and it's all because of one or two things that I do. But having a set of eyeballs keeps me from getting into those patterns where I get the club stuck behind me. And I don't think people understand how important it is, and I don't think people understand how much work these pros do. I mean, they have a golf club in their hand every day of the week.
All the time.
They're always working
on
something.
They live with them.
Yep. And,
they,
you know,
live with them.
Think about it, man. You show up on Monday for an event. You're probably working on your swing based on what you saw last week, what the issues were. Then Tuesday is your really only day to see the golf course. Then you're in a pro-am Wednesday. You play Thursday, Friday, you make the cut. Saturday, Sunday, you're grinding it out. And then you're on a plane to the next location. And you arrive Sunday night or Monday, and you start the process again, and it's a grind. And you have to be with the money that's out there now. That's why they have all these teams surrounding them, so they can focus on the golf. Can you remember the mini tours, man? We had to get to the next spot, find the hotel, find a place to eat, do all these things outside of just playing the game, and then we had to go show up the next day and play. Yeah. Nowadays it's all automated and taken care of. All they have to do is eat, sleep, and go play golf. And more power to them. I mean, it's amazing the way the game's changed over the years. I mean, you know, Arnold kind of transformed the game and through his sponsorships and the TV, and just had a phenomenal effect on it. And today, and Tiger pushed the needle the last 20 years, and now the purses are outrageous. I mean, crap, you can go out on the mini tours, the web.com tour, and make $1 million, and, you know, in a couple years. And that just wasn't around when
back when I played Gaylord.
Yep.
There was nothing you could play in.
I know.
They had some state championships and things, but there wasn't at the web.com tour, you know, or these other tours. And now, that's like Ed Fryett. He missed a final school. There were three schools, three stages, by one stroke twice.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Asia and played. He won the Malaysian Open, beat Lee Westwood in the playoff for that. Indonesian Open, China Open, Korean Open, the Indian Open. He set the course record at Royal Calcutta there, one of the oldest courses in the world, you know. And the China Open, I mean, and I said, well, why don't you come back here? I said, the top 15 back then, get their player's card. And I said, you're a world-class player. Come back here. Quit traveling the world. He did. Won a tournament back then. It was the Nike Tour, and got on the tour and won $500,000 his first half year he was on the tour over here, you know.
I think he set a record at Doral, didn't he?
Yeah, 8 straight birdies at Doral.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, the Blue Monster.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
I played in that tournament.
Well, I got to tell you.
The 18th hole, I made some good bogeys on 18.
Yeah.
My second shot was always in the water to the left.
Yeah, it's great.
I'd take my drop and get it up and in, make my bogey, and wait till the next day.
Yeah. God, Doral, what a great golf course the Blue Monster was. And, you know, it's been redone now, and I think Trump improved it quite a bit, made it a little more challenging. So it's sad to see. I hope they continue to play the tournament there. I don't know if it's actually going to be in the rotation anymore or not, but You know, just some great. So we're gonna, Jimmy, we've got to do this more often, buddy. You've got some great stories to tell of the past, and you know, I like to bring us old guys out here and share what we know, because in another 10 years we're not going to be around anymore. And I think one of the problems I see with golf instruction today, it's too oriented around what the professionals are doing, and most amateurs are never going to get close to that. And I think I think it's had a detrimental effect on teaching. And I think all these, you know, so-called reputation teachers that charge all this money, I think they've kind of hurt us, because Jimmy, we used to do lessons for $25-$35, you know, forever and ever, and we'd be packed all day. Forever. I mean, and I can drop my rates right now and increase my business, and I'd much rather. So I've dropped my rates. I'm down to $1 a minute now, and I want people to come out and learn the game. And you know, not being in a financial bind, it allows me to do that. But I got to tell you, man, I charge $120 and I can do 5 lessons maybe a week, but I drop it down to 60 and I can do 10 or 15. And to me, that's much more rewarding. And I don't know what the trend's going to be. I have all the bells and whistles, an incredible facility indoors and outdoors. And yet, you know, I see these guys doing these $100 lessons, and they're using their iPhone to film it and show them on the iPhone what they're doing wrong. And I'm thinking, and this guy's charging you $100, and you know, what's your long-term goal? I mean, he's just coming out of the pro shop to do an hour lesson. He's going back in the pro shop. I mean, he's not a
Hey Gaylord.
It's crazy.
The art of being a great teacher, though, is not to tell them what they're doing wrong.
Exactly.
The art of being a great teacher is first tell them something they're doing right before you drop the bomb on them.
Exactly. No, it's always find the good thing first. Trust me. It's, man, you're perfectly on plane in the backswing. But other than that,
I recommended on these golf links on Facebook. I said that every teaching pro ought to buy a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Exactly.
I said, because it's a people business.
Yep.
I said, your students are scared to death when they come to you. They're trying too hard to perform for you.
Yep.
And you can take a kid and they'll be doing real good and then watch their parents walk up and see if they can concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a test.
Well, listen, I agree, Jimmy, 100%, and that's great advice. Listen, we're running out of time for this show, Jimmy. I want to thank you for coming in, and we're going to do this again. I'd like to get you on at least once a month. I think you're a fountain of knowledge, and we talk the same language. And we just want to share with you guys, and you know, to reach out to Jimmy in Vegas. You go to his podcast, obviously, and all his information will be there for you guys to reach out for him if you're in town. And you can always go to thevegasgolfcoach.com and find me and everything I'm involved with all over Las Vegas. So thanks again, Jimmy. I really appreciate it. And we'll do this again.
I sure enjoyed it, and I hope we helped the listening audience.
Oh, yeah. I think we did a great job today. Well, folks, it's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to thegolfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, The Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.